on our numbering system is 09SA169.
May it please the court, Paul Bennington again for Assistant Attorney General for the State of Colorado, representing the state engineer, Dick Wolf, who's here with us today, I should add, as is the Division Engineer for Water Division 5, Alan Martellaro, and as well as the Colorado Water Conservation Board. This appeal is very similar to last, Your Honors, except this involves Homestake Reservoir and upstream releases of water from Homestake Reservoir to augment the authority's out of priority.
Can you just give us a sort of geography of the stream? Where are these two reservoirs in these two cases sit, and where are the diversions being made?
The diversions are being made, both the reservoirs sit, Your Honor, above the confluence of Gore Creek and the Eagle River, which Gore Creek's what flows through Vail and converges with the Eagle River near Minturn, or downstream of Minturn. Both the reservoirs are upstream on the Eagle River. The depletions, or the diversions that are augmented, all occur downstream of that confluence of Gore Creek and the Eagle River, and that would be in the village of Avon, the Eagle Vail Metropolitan District, Beaver Creek, Edwards, Arrowhead, and so on, down the Eagle River Valley from that point, Your Honor.
To its confluence with the Colorado, and then any impact below the confluence there of the Eagle and the Colorado?
Correct. All the depletions occur above the confluence of the Eagle River and the Colorado River.
Okay. But the priorities you're concerned about, many of them lie below that confluence of the Colorado and the Eagle.
That's correct. Many are below. There are exchange rights within the Eagle River above the confluence of the Eagle River and the Colorado. Of course, we have the in-stream flow rights. We're also concerned about a rebound effect, Your Honor, on other Green Mountain beneficiaries, which is probably more detail than we want to go into here.
But the in-stream flow that's alleged to have been injured or may be injured is in the Eagle River?
Yes, Your Honor. And I just want to mention one thing very quickly about the public service company being the dominant calling right on downstream, Your Honor. There's also the cameo call. And we also need to keep in mind that Green Mountain Reservoir keeps the public service company's Shoshone power plant whole. So to the extent they're not fully replacing their depletions, Your Honor, Green Mountain Reservoir makes that up for them. And the public service company isn't here complaining because Green Mountain takes care of their problem. They've become much less active in recent litigation because of the realization that Green Mountain Reservoir tends to make up for other people's shortfalls. But that has a rebound injury on other people that need to benefit from Green Mountain, Your Honor, and that's part
of... Who is complaining, Mr. Bennington?
The state and the Colorado Water Conservation Board, Your Honor, that have been stream flows in this reach. And the case that Mr. Holloman was talking about, the one that was adjudicated before, that involved the Wolford and Rudi reservoirs. And that was a case that involved replacement by exchange from downstream reservoirs that deliver water to the confluence of the Eagle and the Colorado rivers. Completely different type of operation from these upstream reservoirs. And there was a specific term and condition in that case, Your Honor, that precluded the operation of those exchanges when the in-stream flow wasn't met. We don't have that kind of condition in either of these two cases, Your Honor, that are before you this morning. It was a totally different type of situation in that other case. The authority's actual ongoing depletions, their actual water use, was not litigated in that case, Your Honor. Our position in that case was, show us what your use is. Show us your proposed use of water. What are your actual mix of uses? We felt that that was their burden. They're a sophisticated water user, Your Honor, with over a $60 million annual budget, 25,000 customers, 5,000 acre feet of diversions. They had the best access to evidence to show what their mix of uses were. We felt they should be held to strict proof of what their uses were. This court held that Mr. Williamson's injury opinion, even though it was unsupported by any data as to their uses, their actual uses, that was enough for the water court to rely upon. And that shifts a huge burden, Your Honors, to other water users in the state, when a sophisticated party like this comes in and wants to, you know, has this very complicated system and wants to run an augmentation plant, it shifts the burden to us to go subpoena all their water meter records and demonstrate what their own use is when they have better access to that evidence. And we believe that by relying on an outdated table like that in their plan, they assumed a higher risk of scrutiny after the decree was entered. They assumed a higher risk that someone was going to take a look at what they're actually doing after the decree and invoke the water court's retained jurisdiction. The public service company requested the table be attached. The public service company also asked that the three-year retained jurisdiction period that the rest of the parties had agreed to be extended to 10 years because they intended the table to be a guide for accounting and they wanted that 10-year period to be able to evaluate the authority's accounting. Well, the period has acted just as public service company.
Well, this was an uncontested referee's ruling that was approved by the water judge, correct?
That's correct.
Was the state in the case?
The CWCB was a party. It had stipulated out of the case before public service company signed its stipulation with the authority. And it was in that stipulation that the table was attached. But all the decree said about the table when it was attached, Your Honor, and circulated to all the parties, was that it was a summary of the depletions in the authority's service areas. That's all the decree said.
Well, I guess what...
Nobody...
At the end of the day, these issues weren't really litigated about the operational, practical operational effect of the table.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no directive in the decree that they get to use the table. And we have a declaratory judgment action claim still pending before the water court. Did this decree even authorize them to use the table? We don't think it did. But the court hasn't ruled on that yet, Your Honor. That issue hasn't been decided. But if you look at the decree, it says they will account for their depletions in accordance with their original plans. But then it says, well, here's a summary of what those would show. But it doesn't say, yes, you get to use this table in your accounting. It neither approved the use or required the use of the table in this decree. And yet in the subsequent plans that have come out, the authority has argued, we're bound by 98 CW 205, the previous appeal. We have to use this table. Water court told us to use it. And we don't think that's the case, Your Honor. I wanted to just briefly tell you about a few differences in this case. The present appeal from the previous one. One difference is, of course, the decree was entered on February 6, 2003, and it was a five-year retained jurisdiction period, which expired on February 6, 2008, after our petition was filed, but before the water court dismissed the state's petition in December of 2008. Another difference is that the table is not attached to this decree. It is not referenced in this decree. We felt we needed to invoke the water court's retained jurisdiction because the authority is arguing that because the table was in an engineering report that was circulated to the parties during the case, that everybody understood that they would get to use the table for this case. We disagree that the water court approved or required the use of the table in this case. And in this case, we also have a declaratory judgment claim still pending before the water court as to whether this decree approves the use of the table. But we could not afford to wait for that ruling, Your Honors. We needed to invoke the retained jurisdiction of the court before it expired because, Justice Malarkey, we agree with Mr. Howman. Once the retained jurisdiction period expires, we can't come in and ask the court to reconsider the question of injury. And to answer your question, Justice Hobbs, about those other two cases you asked Mr. Holloman about, that had to do with the state engineer's curtailment authority and the fact that every augmentation plan requires that the state engineer shall curtail any out-of-priority diversions, the depletions from which are not so replaced as to prevent injury to vested water rights. We didn't view that, Your Honor, as if the state engineer makes an independent determination of actual injury, he could come back in and reopen the decree. We see it as an independent evaluation of whether there was the actual replacement intended by the decree. So he gets to decide, did they actually replace as they were supposed to, even if they were supposed to replace under a faulty table? Did they actually make that replacement under the faulty table or not? regardless of whether the state engineer disagrees with the faulty table. The time for him to attack the faulty table is either in the original adjudication or during the retained jurisdiction period. Once it becomes final, that prediction of what was going to happen becomes final, and the table becomes final. He can't come back in and attack the table. All he can do is say, did they actually make the replacement that that table required them to make? So it's an issue, in your case, Justice Hobbs, it's an issue of actual replacement as opposed to some independent determination of actual injury. So we believe we need to address this table now during the retained jurisdiction period. The Clear Creek decision, we do believe controls here. What the court said is that during the original adjudication, we can consider injurious effects without seeing actual injury. That's what the water court does every day. So during the retained jurisdiction period, as the Clear Creek court was saying, you know, once we know where the reservoir location is, the court can we don't need to build the reservoir and see it operate. The court can reconsider the injurious effects based on this new evidence that the plan anticipates will come in after the decree. And based on that reservoir location, okay, I can reconsider the injurious effects. I don't need to see, the court doesn't need to see actual injury to make conclusions approving augmentation plans. If that were the case, we wouldn't have any augmentation plans because they all involve the potential for future injury.
Mr. Bennington, I just want to ask you a general question. As I understand it, maybe this is wrong, the court hasn't ruled on your petition to extend retained jurisdiction, right?
Actually, Your Honor, it has, because it dismissed our entire petition. And our petition included a claim to extend the retained jurisdiction in both of these cases for 10 years after any judgment was entered. So it effectively did.
Well, the authority has agreed to at least partly to that, right? To extend retained jurisdiction. I mean, it seems to me if the plan is in operation, it becomes, you know, axiomatic that you would retain jurisdiction to see how it works in the future, right?
You're right, Your Honor. If you accept the water court's factual conclusions that the plan hasn't operated during the irrigation season,
right,
how could it possibly conclude that the absence of injury has been conclusively established?
Right. You can't.
Yeah.
They've conceded that, right?
Yes, I believe they've conceded that the water court erred in not extending the retained jurisdiction period, Your Honor.
So let's assume then that you reach a resolution of that for a second, or we direct the resolution, why is it necessary for us to get into the question of whether now you can invoke retained jurisdiction or not, and actually wait until the plan is physically in operation?
Well, not accepting that it hasn't operated, Your Honor, as Justice Hyde asked, the injury can happen in May. I mean, it can happen. The injury's coming, Your Honor. It's just a matter of time. And that insufficient reservoir release can be determined now by the water court. There's no need to wait for actual injury. And we do not believe, you look at the legislative history of the statute, you look at the whole statutory scheme, we do not believe the General Assembly intended that actual injury must occur before the water court can act. That's just contrary to everything about the 1969 Water Right Determination Administration Act. We think if that injury, in Justice Martinez's opinion in the Denver case, this court held that if there's operational experience that gives rise to a cognizable issue of injury, then there is an obligation by the water court to hold a hearing in order to prevent vested water rights. Threatened injury is a cognizable issue of injury for the water court. It doesn't have to be actual injury. And in all our augmentation plan cases, that's really all we're dealing about with is the threat of future injury. And that is one of the issues or one of the cognizable issues of injury that we have in the state's petition. I do want to address Justice Rice's questions about the state opposing the evidentiary hearing. All we opposed was having a bifurcated trial. We wanted an evidentiary hearing. But on our legal theory that we could act to preclude injury, it did not make sense to us to have a bifurcated trial. We wanted the court to resolve the factual issues at the trial. We were not opposed to having an evidentiary hearing to resolve the disputed issues of fact in the affidavits. And again, I would draw your attention to the authority's own answer brief in both of these cases. In the previous case, I won't go back into, but where they indicate that Mr. Whitaker's affidavit does in fact infer that releases occurred under the augmentation plan in 98 CW 205. We also need to keep in mind, Your Honors, the supplemental nature of both of these augmentation plans. Both of them are just adding replacement sources to the existing plans, and they're using the authority of the decree in the previous appeal to use a table for all those plants. They are using that table during the irrigation season, and we are seeing how it works as measured against their customer meter records and what their actual water demands are. And so it's not to say that the plan hasn't operated. We just disagree. The water use side of the plan operates every day.
Now, with respect to the...
Please. Just right.
Thank you. I'm sitting here thinking about retained jurisdiction, and this almost feels a little bit, just to be frank with you, like almost like a settlement conference between the two of you. I mean, your position is that you have to have full retained jurisdiction year-round for a period of time, and they seem to be conceding that retained jurisdiction would be appropriate in both cases for the irrigating months. Is that a fair summary of your positions? So all we're not really talking about whether retained jurisdiction should be there at all. I guess both of you agree that to that extent the trial court has somewhat erred. Why do you have to have it for non-irrigating months?
Your Honor, I don't think our brief has stated that we had to have it for non-irrigating.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, and that's why this is kind of feeling like a settlement conference to me. So if you only want it for irrigating months as well, and they say that you can have it for irrigating months, am I oversimplifying things? I'm sure I must be.
Your Honor, but it's not addressing the threat of imminent injury that could happen at any time.
So is it? Do you just want an opinion from us that says something? Or because it seems to me, if you both agree that irrigating months are enough, are you just asking then for a remand as well?
We're asking for a remand.
But just for the irrigating months?
The issue is the problem only exists under the table during the irrigation months.
And they seem to be conceding that retained jurisdiction should be imposed for the irrigating
months. That's correct, Your Honor. And if we could reopen this under retained jurisdiction, a term and condition that would resolve all of this is that they primarily rely on these reservoirs during the winter months, but they do use them during the irrigation season or want to. But if they were to say, hey, we're not going to operate these during the irrigation season, we'll use other sources, that would resolve the controversy as well. I don't think they're going to be willing to agree to that in this settlement conference, Your Honor. But yes, that would resolve one of the issues.
Well, I'm like tempted to say, well, so how many years do you want? How many years do you want? And I mean, what do you want?
Well, the court needs to make factual findings as to the appropriate period of time, Your Honor. We had requested...
We wouldn't be making the factual findings
right.
Ourselves. So we would just be simply remanding it to the trial court?
To determine the appropriate length of an extension, Your Honor. But we're also asking to return it to the trial court to say, you can go ahead and reconsider the question of injury now before actual injury happens, because we want to prevent actual injury under the statutory scheme. Now, we originally requested 10 years from any judgment on our petition. We then amended our claim to say 10 years after the authority provides the parties and the court with written notification of releases during the irrigation season. So we tied it to actual releases during the irrigation season, because we know as soon as they do one of those, Your Honor, under the table, it's going to be insufficient. But why do we have to wait for that? Why do we have to wait for injury to vested water rights? Before doing that.
The opposing party seems to be agreeing with you that you don't have to wait for that. There should be retained jurisdiction with respect to those months.
Yes, but they're saying, but in that retained jurisdiction, you have to wait till actual injury occurs before you can come back to the court.
And but we have come back
before actual they're arguing we came back before actual injury has occurred. We're not conceding that point yet because we think there are disputed facts about whether they actually made reservoir releases during the irrigation season. But assuming there haven't been any during the irrigation season, we believe we should be able to have this decided now by the court before actual injury occurs. They're requiring, Judge Asa's requiring, and they are requiring actual injury to somebody before the water court can act. And that certainly wasn't the case in Clear Creek. The Frico case, Your Honor, it just didn't involve any post-decree operation. There was no claims, you know, that case was all about something that had completely concluded before the trial.
Yes, but it did involve an examination of the legislative history, the burdens, what the intent of the legislature was to have this period for operational experience. And let me just read you the sentence out of that I think they're referring to out of the Frico opinion. If other water rights thereafter, that means after the decree, experience water shortages resulting from failure to implement the protective conditions, or because the protective conditions adopted in the judgment and decree did not sufficiently protect against injury, the water judge on a sufficient showing of injury reopens the inquiry into protective conditions, or in the alternative, extends the period of retained jurisdiction so that the test period can operate longer. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And in that case, in the decision you wrote in that case, you were not, the ambiguity, your decision says the ambiguity in the statute that caused you to look at the legislative history was whether the historic consumptive use analysis for a change of water right could be reconsidered. We don't believe there's any ambiguity on this issue about whether you need actual injury, whether you can act solely to preclude injury. You weren't asked that question in that case, Your Honor. It wasn't before you. You never wrote, oh yeah, and it has to be actual injury as opposed to threatened or imminent injury. That question just wasn't before you in that case. You just were requiring, in that case, and you said it out, Your Honor. You said that there's the future injury analysis is a two-step thing. The first step is based on some measure of predicting future injury at the time of trial. The second stage is based on operational experience. You didn't say it is based on actual injury. You just said we need to have some post-decree operational experience on which the court can then reconsider. We have that post-decree operational experience. Now, Mr. Hallman argued, well, why didn't the state come forward with all this, you know, before 98 CW205 or before 03 CW78? The water use changes every year, Your Honor. Our evidence shows that post-decree, it's all, every year is different. The table underreplaced for every year from 2001 to 2005, but it was all over. It went up and down, and so the evidence of what happened prior to 1988 CW205 is completely different. That's evident. The evidence we're presenting today simply was not available.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask Mr. Bankton, because you're asking for the threat of cognizable injury, but they're saying that basically, and you say it was up to them to prove their actual use, But on the other hand, they're saying you have plenty of opportunity because they use the same plan for depletions to prove that. And the decree in this one case was 2000, the other one was 2003. So why is there really a significant difference? Could you have done it? And I remember in the case that the Chief Justice wrote, the last day you objected to the tables in discovery. There has to be a balance between res judicata and a finality of decree at the same time protecting against injury. So how I guess I'd like to know a little more about what was really available.
Well, Your Honor, in the 2003 case, the CWCB was the only party in that case, Your Honor, and learned about the full basis of the table in a late deposition just before trial. So there was no time, by the time we figured out exactly how they came about producing this table, the discovery had already closed. There was no opportunity to subpoena the water meter records there. We had another case, Your Honor, an O2 case, that is still pending before the water court. It was in that case when this court ruled that we were going to have to show what their proposed use was instead of them coming forward with it. We subpoenaed their water meter records for that other case, and that showed, that provided us the evidence of injury. We felt the 98 case, Your Honor, the first, these two cases, Your Honor, nobody anticipated that the water court, the CWCB and the division engineer did not consider these decrees to be approving the use of the table or requiring the use of the table. So there was no reason why we should have gone after their water meter records to show the table was invalid, because it was just meant as a guide for accounting. That's all the, you know, that's, public service company said that. We want it attached to the decree as a guide to the accounting, not that it was going to be the thing that controlled the accounting and was fixed and permanent. And it was just supposed to give people an idea, hey, are they accounting, you know, are they within what we think this table would have called for at full build out? And so, Your Honor, it's just bogus to say we should have been. CWCB had already stipulated out of the case, Your Honor, when that table first appeared. And then they just described it as a summary of the depletions in the authority service areas. There was no statement, oh, and we're going to use this in our accounting, and we're required to use it. So if you're going to object, you better object now. There was no such communication in either of these cases, Your Honor. So in the 2003 case, you know, Your Honor, this court has established, in many cases, had mentioned that parties were allowed to hold an applicant to strict proof of its claims. Sure. We looked at that language and we said, well, strict proof of their use or proposed use, which the water court is supposed to consider, they should have come forward with strict proof of their use or proposed use. But they used this outdated table, and you know, we didn't have time in that case, Your Honor, to subpoena 25,000 customer meter records and do the whole analysis. So,
you only had a couple of minutes left. I want to get back to Justice Rice's questions about summary judgment.
Yes.
In one sentence or two sentences or less, assuming we adopt your interpretation of the statute, for a second, what is the material issue, the fact dispute issue, that is raised in this case, and assuming also that the plan is not in effect?
Your Honor, in our verified petition that was filed in both of these cases, our verified claims that the use of the table has caused injury and will cause injury in the future if it's used. So all Judge Ossola ruled on was, well, I'm finding that it hasn't operated and there hasn't been any actual injury. But he did not resolve the factual issue. Well, is there injury threatened in the future?
Do their affidavits deny that the use of the table has created a threat of cognizable injury?
Their affidavits, to the best of my recollection, Justice Bender, only dealt with whether the plant has actually operated during the irrigation season. And did not dispute, it did not go into the merits of the table and whether the table accurately accounts for the authority's depletions. That is a, you know, the report that the Division Engineer's Office did, Your Honor, on this water system is the most extensive report the Division 5 Office has ever prepared for the state engineer. The factual issues regarding that table are huge. We didn't get into that in these affidavits. And so the water court wasn't ruling that, hey, there's not going to be any future injury either. Let me just have a moment here, Your Honor. In terms of the summary judgment issue in this case, Your Honors, again, Mr. Whitaker asserted that there have been reservoir releases during May and October, which are irrigation season months, and the authority
from this Homestake Reservoir.
That the authority's accounting showed it happening under the Eagle Park Reservoir case, the previous appeal, Your Honor. But then they came back and said, well, no, we didn't do any under Eagle Park Reservoir. And that created the factual issue of, well, which reservoir did that occur under? They claimed Green Mountain Reservoir. But the decree in Green Mountain Reservoir doesn't allow replacement in May and October for three of the authority service areas. So the question remained, what reservoir made these releases to cover those three service areas in May and October? That's an issue that we still don't know the answer to, Your Honor. And the thing is, this plan, the Homestake Plan, contemplated this water use and contemplated preventing injury with releases from Homestake. If they did not make a release to cover that period, injury occurred under this plan.
You got in procedurally in enough time before the retained jurisdiction expired and you filed your petition?
Yes.
Okay.
We filed it in September of 2006, Your Honor. It wouldn't be until February of 2008 that the retained jurisdiction period expired. We think the courts still have jurisdiction over this plan, and we want you to restore that jurisdiction to the Water Court. Thank you very much for your time today.
May it please the court, Fritz Holloman again for the Upper Eagle Regional Water Authority. What we have here are the identical legal issues we had in the 09 SA-168 case that we just argued, but we have better facts, and I think these facts illustrate the dangers of the rule that the court would, that the state would have the court adopt. Let me just give you a little bit of background, just as Hobbs, you asked about the geography. Both Homestake and Eagle Park Reservoir are upstream in the very headwaters of the Eagle River, just over the pass to the northwest from Leadville. And they then release water down through the Eagle River, Camp Hale, through Minturn, and then are capable of providing replacement water to the authority. The authority has lots of different replacement sources available to it, as I mentioned. The decree in this case, 98 CW270, just deals with Homestake Reservoir. That decree, as I mentioned, was entered in 2003. Of the 500 acre feet of replacement water identified in that decree, the authority has the right to use 125 acre feet for its replacement supply. And again, 98 CW270, the decree here, and 98 CW205, the one we just talked about, are both discussed extensively in your Upper Eagle case. So a lot of the facts that I'm talking about, this court has already recited in that earlier decision. Mr. Bennington explained that the table of depletion factors that we've been arguing about is not, in fact, attached to this decree. That's a significant difference from the 98 CW205 case. But what he doesn't mention is that the depletions that are identified to be used in this decree are based on what we called all of the original decrees in the 03 CW78 case. Those are all the original augmentation plans that Avon, Berry Creek, all of the authority's member entities did before the consolidation of the authority when it was created. This decree, 98 CW270, directs that depletions should be made according to the depletion rates in those original decrees. What we argued about in the 2006 Upper Eagle case, the 03 CW78, was whether those depletion rates from the original decrees were consistent with the table of depletion factors that we use. The court held clearly that they were. So there's no difference. Whether we're augmenting and accounting according to the depletion rates in the original decrees or under this summary of the depletion factors that's in the table, the rate is the same. That's precisely why Public Service Company, and this is explained in the Upper Eagle case, this is why Public Service Company wanted that table attached to this decree, so that it and the other parties would not have to go back and flip through, what is it, 10 different augmentation plans to determine what the depletion rates should be. This depletion factor table is an accurate summary. Just like 98 CW205, the state's alleged new evidence of injury here is its depletion analysis for the period 2001-2005. I assert again that just as easily could have been done in 1998 or 1999. Yes, it varies every year, but it's exactly the same type of evidence. It could have been done. It was not done. But the issue was raised and extensively discussed by a public service company, and their resolution was, hey, so we all know what the depletion rates should be. Let's attach this table of depletion factors to the decree in 98 CW 205. And as Mr. Bennington mentioned, the engineering report in this case explained that the authority would be using them as well. The final decree here was 2003. As I mentioned before, a big chunk of the state's evidence here is not even post-decree. It certainly could have been done. If they had an issue, the time to raise it was before that initial trial. This issue was amenable to resolution at the adjudication in 2003. And that's an important holding of the Farmers case, that issues that were amenable to trial in the first instance should not be raised on retained jurisdiction.
We think there are counsel, can I get you to stop there? But you're not disputing that the state does have some post-decree evidence?
I'm saying that...
I understand your point that most of it could have been done before, but I guess I'm trying to get zero back into whether there are any existing fact issues. And if indeed we reject your interpretation of the statute and say that you can have some anticipated injury, not actual injury, I'm wondering if you dispute in this case that there's evidence of anticipated or future injury.
Your Honor, I don't dispute at all that the state has done a depletion analysis post-decree for 04 and 05. I strongly dispute that it shows injury. And I'd like to point out that what the state is asking you to consider is 2001 to 2005 evidence. And we had a 2006 trial concerning this very issue. And the trial court said there is not injury. It's the function of the depletion factors in 98 CW 205. In this case, and in the 03 CW 78 case that was the subject of the 2006 appeal, is exactly the same. It's just a calculation of the depletion rates in the authority. The only thing that's different is the replacement source. I mean, if this 10 square feet in front of me is the authority, and it's cities and towns and parks, and there's a river that comes through it that is used to supply all of those uses, and then when those uses are when diversions are made to serve those uses, the depletion factors calculate how much of that use will be consumed and how much will return to the river. That issue doesn't change whether the source of the replacement water is Eagle Park Reservoir over there or Homestake Reservoir over there or downstream replacement from Rudai and or Green Mountain Reservoir. The issue is exactly the same. So yes, they did the study, but we strongly dispute that it shows injury.
Thank you.
The question about whether there's any disputed fact here on whether this plan has operated is that there isn't. You asked about Mr. Whitaker's affidavits in this case. He did not say that the plan under 98 CW 270 had operated. There is no allegation whatsoever that Homestake Reservoir had operated. Mr. Williamson, in his affidavits for the authority, clearly said it had not operated. So there's no disputed fact on that at all, and I think the issue before you in this case is strictly the legal one. I'd like to get into a little bit more about the consequences of the rule we think that the state's asking you to impose and the threat to finality for water court decrees posed by that request. Again, the petition asserts injury based in part on 2001 and 2002 depletion analysis. The point here is the decree was entered in 2003. There's been no operation of this plan. Nothing has changed since the decree was entered, yet we have a new challenge in 2006. So what we're doing is still just doing the stage one injury analysis. We're still just talking about potential, future, speculative injury. That's what you're supposed to do before the decree is entered. If you adopt our rule and go along with what we think you said in Farmers and Denver v. Thornton and require actual operation, when we come back, you'll be doing something different. It will be, there'll be a concrete set of facts. We'll have something new to do. What we're doing here is nothing more than what we did in the very first instance. Again, we are amenable to the extension of retained jurisdiction during the irrigation season. The retained jurisdiction.
Well, what happened with the trial judge? Why did he just go ahead and deny an extension in this homestead case? Did he just overlook it? I mean, certainly we've got to reverse in that instance, right? Because if there's no operational experience under any conceivable interpretation of this provisional law that we've been talking about, there ought to be an extension, right?
For the irrigation season?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. And we just draw that clear distinction between winter and...
So we need to reverse in this case.
A remand on the irrigation season?
Yeah.
We would agree. And we'd note that retained jurisdiction expired in 2008, but acknowledge that the state did file their petition to extend, in part to extend, before that expired. And just to get back to your question, Justice Rice, we don't oppose the extension of the retained jurisdiction period, but we're strongly opposed to going back and having to start a new trial and the court actually invoking retained jurisdiction and litigating this injury issue until there has been some actual operation, some concrete facts to test against. Again, we think farmers struck that careful balance between finality and retained jurisdiction.
And just so I get it straight, yes, though, it's at the threshold of what needs to be shown to the water judge, who has some discretion in the issue as to whether the time has arrived to see if the plan is adequate, and there needs to be a conclusive showing of non-injury, right? You would agree with that. That's in the statute. The applicant still continues to have that burden if the trial judge decides to reopen it, right? Based on a sufficient showing.
Yeah, I would say it's three parts, Your Honor, and I basically agree with you. Yeah, retained jurisdiction can be invoked once actual operation has started, and there is some prima facie showing of injury by the applicant. I think that's what you said. And we invoke retained jurisdiction, the trial court starts again, and then if they've made that prima facie showing, I think the burden then is on the applicant to ultimate burden to prove no injury.
So in both of these cases, we could look at Judge Oslo's order to just say a sufficient prima facie showing hasn't been made. And then the alternative is to, because there's not sufficient operational experience in the water judge's view of the facts being proffered to him, then he should be extending the retained jurisdiction period.
Yes, I think I basically agree, Your Honor. I would say,
okay,
you need to say there hasn't been actual operation and there's been no showing of injury. Time's not ripe. Some irrigation.
Now, in the facts of these two cases, why it makes sense for a water judge to put this off is that there are other credits, consumptive use credits, that have been retired to the stream. There are other replacement sources that exist here to take care of this injury, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's a very important fact. During the irrigation season, the authority relies on those original decrees. The replacement supply in all of those original decrees is the historic consumptive use credits from all the historic ditches that were in this valley. And the trial court looked at this in 03 CW 78 and said, during the irrigation season, the authority relies on those historic consumptive use credits, and further concluded that those historic consumptive use credits are available to augment the authority's depletions through build-out. So they are always in the stream, and until full build-out, the trial court said, the authority is over-augmenting the stream during the irrigation season with those historic consumptive use credits. And it also said during the winter, the authority is over-augmenting the stream. I don't want it to be lost that in-house depletion rates we're required to use for our two biggest service areas are 8% and 9%. The testimony from and the division engineer agrees that two routinely accepted numbers is 5%. So during the winter months, and actually throughout the entire year for our in-house depletions, the authority is supplying roughly 60 to 80% more irrigation water than is more replacement water than is required at least as to those two surface areas.
Let me ask something that I just can't quite get my mind around. Given what you were just saying in answer to Justice Hobbs, why does it really make a difference whether it's limited to the irrigation and the conditions that you set out? You know, it has to actually be working and there has to be a prima facie case, et cetera. Why does it really matter whether retained jurisdiction is limited to the irrigating months or not?
We don't want to be in a position to relitigate the question of whether our winter supplies are adequate when the trial court held that they are, and the Supreme Court already affirmed that they were. So we want to just take that off the table.
Okay. I guess I understand.
Could I ask you one question about injury again? And this was partially in response to your or as a result of your last responses. When you throughout have talked about injury and whether injury will occur or whether injury has occurred, whether the plant's been operated, the thing that's bothering me is this. If what's at issue here is this particular augmentation plan and the amount of augmentation or replacement water that's been ordered as part of this plan for the allowed to compensate for the out of priority depletions that are allowed by this plan, if those augmentations in this plan are not going to be adequate, regardless of whether you prevent injury some other way, doesn't this plan need to be modified?
If during the test period that we're talking about there is this prima facie showing of injury, then I agree with Mr. Bennington. This plan needs to be precluded, enjoined, or modified.
Well, if it's a prima facie showing that the amount of out-of-priority depletions that are actually occurring cannot be compensated for or replaced by the ordered augmentation in this plan, doesn't that show injury with regard to this plan?
I think it's at that point, until it's operated, it's still just future injury. And in Farmers, you clearly explained that that's the future injury is the question that's supposed to happen at the original adjudication. And until then, you get actual operation and something to test against it, there shouldn't be this opportunity to come back in. Mr. Bennington said this evidence wasn't available. It absolutely was.
That last answer sort of comes back around to sounding to me again like you're saying, well, it's not that there won't be injury, it's just that they missed their opportunity when they should have shown that injury.
Your Honor, I need to say emphatically again, we strongly dispute there will be injury. We tried that issue. We tried that issue in February 2006. And the trial court, after a full trial on this very issue, said there will not be injury. This table of depletion factors adequately calculates depletions for the authority. So we do strongly dispute that.
Okay.
Let me ask you just how this water is handled. You know, you've got two buckets here, and you've got 300 acre feet in the Eagle Reservoir, and you've got how much, 500 in Homestake?
There are many parties, Your Honor. The authority is only entitled to 125 acre feet out of Homestake. And
how much out of Eagle?
The plan that we're talking about, and again, many entities own interests in Eagle Park Reservoir. The authority is entitled to 383 acres.
Okay, fine. Now, is that water, under the way these plans operate, available to the state engineer if injury is occurring to release? Can they order the release?
No, Your Honor, because what we will rely on during an irrigation season call is our historic consumptive use credits. Mr. Bennington,
Just assume those are all used up.
Oh, okay.
The calculation shows they're all used up.
Yes.
What is the discretion and authority of the state engineer to order releases from either or both of these supplemental augmentation sources?
I believe their authority would be to order us to cease diversions in the Eagle River until we showed that we had adequate replacement water to cover out of priority depletions. So I think technically their authority is to order us to stop direct diversions from the river if we're out of priority.
Okay, and how's that done on us? Just an administrative order ordering the curtailment? I thought some of these plans, at least, maybe not this one, provided the water there so that the state engineer can make certain that any hole, any shortage is filled. That's not what occurs here?
I believe, Your Honor, these plans just talk about the authority covering its out-of-priority depletions with these releases. I don't think they have any unique provision that gives the State and Division Engineer authority to order the releases. Finally, just one final point with Justice Coates had asked about whether it's a function of how much reservoir releases are required. The authority has spent a lot of money developing these upstream sources precisely to keep this river whole. There's no question that there's enough augmentation water. You know, the issue today is just, should we invoke retained jurisdiction? But the issue on the depletion factor table is simply how much should be released. And I don't have anything further unless you do. Thank you.
Again, on behalf of the court, I thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted.